Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Hello, hello, hello. As always, my wonderful audience, and in addition to that, now my wonderful guests when you call in. I'm really enjoying the call-ins. We will have them today, although I have a very, very interesting guest, a different kind of guest in many ways that I think you will identify with, enjoy, and learn from. But meanwhile, I'm very grateful for the calls we get and for the emails I get. They are interesting. Some of them are fascinating. Many are useful. I appreciate them very, very much. Today is September 5th, 2018. September 5th. So if you're listening to this, and it's not September 5th, it's a replay. And sometimes I do replay my shows, especially when I'm traveling. Remember that the phone call-in, this is to get on the air, not to listen. People have been kind of confused about that. It might be that I haven't been explaining it right, but people have been calling this number to listen to the show. That doesn't work. The call-in to talk to me eventually, to get Alex on the phone, to get you set up to smoothly, as Alex does it, get us working together across the world on the phone. The call-in is 888-874-4888. But you listen on prn.fm, www.prn.fm. And the show's at 4 p.m. For those of you who want to call in, you have to do it live. You probably, most of you are listening to it from the archive. So you got to get together yourself and at 4 p.m. on Wednesdays to call in. So that's some of that basic information. Remember, we have a dedicated email. You are using it. You're calling in, emailing in. And occasionally I make a direct response, but it's rare, folks. Mostly I'm just learning from what you have to say. And the email is Breggin Live. I really like that. BregginLive@hotmail.com. And don't forget the breaking news section. Don't forget the searchable archive. You can get to that on for the radio show. You can get to that on Breggin.com. I have been really busy doing interesting things. We've got up my list of where I'm going to be speaking, and in fact, on September 7th, on this coming Friday, I'll be in Orlando talking at the Life Over Death Conference. That's being held there. You can check that out on my website. It's mainly for attorneys. I'm going to give a very scientific presentation and lawyerly presentation. No, I'm not a lawyer. On the role of drugs in our death penalty cases. Because very often people who are convicted of murder have actually been on psychiatric drugs at the time. And I put up as a special item, you can find it. Go to Breggin, Dr. Breggin's highlights and events. That's the top of the page. We got a lot of information there. Practically everything of interest on the website is kind of thumbnailed up there in a line or two. And you'll see a special item, and it's my first PowerPoint, and it's on drugs and violence. So if you want to see a PowerPoint with no talk, just the PowerPoint itself, with lots of information on drugs and violence and references, many of which you can get on my www.123antidepressants. And I'm telling you a lot about what's going on because I've just been doing a lot. Now, we have a new video up. It's on my YouTube channel. You can just go, Google Bregan YouTube, or you can click on it on Bregan.com. And I have a new talk, folks, that I am very, very pleased with. This is a talk I gave to evangelical Christians at the International Association of Biblical Therapy. Now, there's many theologic differences between this Jewish man and evangelical Christians, but there's a lot of love between us, just like the evangelicals love Israel. They get along really well with Jews, and they get along really well with me, and I get along really well with them, and there's a very sweet introduction to me. And then I give an hour talk that's really inspired in the simplicity with which I address the issue of how drugs crush human spirituality, not just psychiatric drugs. It's true, folks, I'm sorry to say, marijuana, alcohol, but mostly I'm focused on psychiatric drugs. I give a really straightforward and simple explanations about how these drugs cause spirituality. And then, and in the process, I think I give my most heartfelt talk about love. Love for one another, love for God, God's love for us, subjects that I am just deciding more and more to talk about because there's so much a part of my life and a part of my life with my wife, Ginger, and with her mom, Jean. So if you want to kind of see me talking to friends on a deep level, it's a big group, so I didn't know all of them, obviously, but you'll sense the friendship between me and the Reverend Ed Buckley when you see him introduce me and when I talk to this group. So it's gotten us an incredibly positive response. So I've made it the top of my YouTube page. So there's a lot going on. The website is forever growing and changing. And I'm just delighted to have you for my audience, to be able to talk about what I'm doing and to have you calling in. And remember The calling is at 888-874-4888. Now, I've got my wonderful guest in the background here. Denise, are you there?
Hi, Peter. I'm here.
Oh, and your voice is clear as a bell. This wonderful woman is Denise Herrenbrook. Denise Herrenbrook, H-E-R-R-E-N-B-R-U-C-K. Denise is an instructor in teacher education and disability studies. She's at Lewis and Clark Graduate School of Education and Counseling, the kind of place that I have taught at most of the time I teach, or usually in schools of education and counseling. And Denise does consultation work. She teaches teachers. She's got a good website. The website is Denise Herrenbrook. Again, it's H-E-R-R-E-N-B-R-U-C-K, DeniseHerrenbrook.com. I met Denise when my wife was in contact with her. And she said, Peter, this is a woman who's been taking care of her father, and now he's passed on, and he was abused by psychiatry. He liked the way she sounds. And really, I think it would be very fine for you to just invite her to come visit with you in the office as a friend and colleague. And we're very sparse about doing that because I'm just so busy. I don't know what to do with myself a lot of the time. And the fact that it's increasing in busyness and interest in my work at this age is very exciting, but it's also, it takes a lot of planning. So I arranged to meet Denise, and I immediately liked her very much. We got along well. She told me about some of what her father had been through, and she was holding this manuscript that she had written, full of detail about what had happened to her dad, and happened upon some really beautifully written pages about her having conversations with her father, which she reproduced when he was showing symptoms of dementia, and she nonetheless got through to him to have these meaningful conversations. I mean, that in itself, which we're going to talk about today, is worth having her on the show, you know, talking through dementia to my father. How did she do that? What did she do? We're going to be talking about that today, and we'll be taking the callers about these kinds of subjects at 888-874-4888. Denise, where is Lewis and Clark?
It's in Portland, Oregon.
So you're far away across the country.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Although I teach online.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Denise teaches online. And, now, I hadn't really finished the story. I knew there was something so important to finish the story with, and Denise, you must have been thinking, is he ever going to talk about it? So I'm sitting there with Denise, and I'm looking at all this stuff, and I say to her, listen, there's such resistance to writing anything critical of psychiatry. I have no idea how to help you get published. And I felt sad about that, and I thought, no, that's a terrible situation. And then all of a sudden it struck me, wait a minute. I can publish Denise. I can publish her blog. I can give Denise an honored guest blogger award. And that's she's very different than most of my honored guest bloggers. And she's the fifth one. The first four are household names in the reform movement, people I've known for years and who made huge contributions. Well, folks, I just thought so much of Denise that I thought she should be an honored guest blogger. And if you look at my frequent alerts, and please, everybody, the frequent alert is the best way to keep up with me, next to the radio show maybe, or even better in some ways. I mean, it's a mix of good things. You know, free. Sign up for the frequent alerts. And so on September 4th, yesterday, we put up her honored guest blogger award, Denise Herrenbrook, and she's got a beautiful essay up. It practically brought tears to my assistant Missy, who's no softie. Missy's gone through the hard knocks of life, like we all have, and she's no softie. She just loved this. So you've got two heartfelt things up there on the alert. You've got the fifth honored guest blogger, and then you've got my heartfelt talk about drugs and the human spirit. So welcome, fifth honored guest blogger, Denise Herrenbrook. And say hello to the audience, introduce yourself, and we'll get started.
Thank you, Peter. That was a very, very complimentary introduction, and I appreciate it. And I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that all the your website and all your books and articles and videos and other things have been just a wealth of information, practical information for people, and hope for people. And I know all over the world. So, you're one of my heroes, and
thank you.
And I'm sure a lot of people, I speak for a lot of people with that, and listening to your radio show too is really therapeutic when you've been through a harrowing experience, because it reminds us that there's other people out there who understand what we've been through, and they're working to make things better, and you don't feel so lonely in what you've experienced. So, anyway.
That's lovely, and I'm trying to make it more and more that. I'm trying to be more and more my genuine self, not just the reformer, but who I really am, because I'm really a lot more than a reformer, I just have a lot I want to share about living life more and more. But thank you so much. for being so positive, and also for, you know, it's deeply gratifying that you've gotten so much from listening. I think you said, what'd you say, practically all my shows. That's hundreds.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, I went back and listened to the archives after I first discovered you, which I think was, I don't remember now whether it was 2 or 3 years ago, but then I went back and listened to the ones I missed. So I'm definitely a fan.
Well, tell us some more about yourself and then about your dad and your experience that you had. And if you feel up to it, I'd love to have you just read just a snippet of your dialogue from your really lovely post that's up on my website, Bregan.com.
Okay. Well, I've worked in special education most of my life. I was, you know, I got a degree, a combination general and special education back in 1979. And I've been a special education program manager, and then I started teaching in higher ed and teacher licensure programs. So I've worked with people with impairments my whole life. They may have had cognitive or physical or sensory impairments. And I actually finally zeroed in sort of in the, you know, mature stage of my career to wanting to specifically teach disability studies, which is a little different orientation with more of a focus on a contextual understanding of disability, rather than a focus on individual diagnosis. So I, you know, a lot of your stuff sort of resonates with me. It's similar, a similar approach. And anyway, though, when my dad was 85, he was living independently with my mom, and then he was returning. They were both returning from an appointment with our tax accountant one day, and he slipped and he fell on the sidewalk and he fractured his tibia. And so then he's getting inpatient care for his broken leg, and he became delirious.
Now, exactly how old was he then?
He was 85.
Okay. But very, very hardy, and you guys were working on all kinds of things together, his life history and stuff like that. So
well,
he was...
yeah, I mean, he did have increasing health issues. He had had a stroke the year before and stopped driving, and he had some other health issues. He was going to a lot of doctor appointments, but he was still very related. He was independent in all his activities of daily living. That's what they say in the medical world. And but we, you know, because his health seemed to be declining, our family was really involved with him in helping him put together his memoirs and also his family history. He was a history buff, sort of like I think you are too, Peter. He got a degree in history, and he had investigated his whole family history emigrating to New York, and then in the Catskill Mountains, there his family had an estate, and he had all these historical documents and photos and stories that he had drafted. And so we were helping him put that together because he seemed to really want to do that. That was like some sort of closure that he wanted to do at this stage in his life. So anyway, though, he becomes delirious. He tries to leave the bed. And he was difficult to manage. And because of his challenging behavior, he ended up involuntarily committed to the geriatric psychiatry ward in the hospital. And when he was there, he was treated with Risperdal, Celexa, and Trazodone. And his functional abilities basically declined extremely rapidly. He was in the hospital 11 days. He was discharged from the hospital in diapers on a gurney. He went by ambulance to a nursing home with instructions to stay on his medications. And he ended up suffering from chronic akathisia and tardive dyskinesia. He had this tic where he'd thrust his tongue out of his mouth and this is sort of dysphoria from the long-term effects of these drugs. And this was
How long was he on the drugs when you became aware of akathisia and the potential TD?
I'm thinking he was on, I thought I saw the akathisia right away, even in the hospital still. But the tardive dyskinesia, I saw that when I visited him about three months, I think, after he had been discharged. And I think he may have been somewhere around that 3 or 4 months we transferred him to the geriatrician who worked at the nursing home he was in, and she recognized the restlessness and took him off the drugs. So I'm thinking it was about 4 months. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah.
But
let me comment on that briefly. And akathisia, folks, means the inability to sit still. But it means so much more. As Denise is very well aware and wrote to me, it's torture. It's being tortured from the inside out. And it can become permanent, tardive akathisia. And so you live the rest of your life because you took any of the antipsychotic drugs, including all the new ones, and you end up... usual window is starting at 3 months, you have high rates of it. And in a man his age, her dad's age, Denise's dad's age, 84?
85, yeah.
85, I mean, you're not going to believe this, but his most likely rate for getting a permanent movement disorder that could possibly torture him, end his life sooner, or cause him twisted neck and agony, make it impossible for him to eat or breathe as well. The rate, his age, I'd say is 50% a year. And it's an almost certainty in 2 years. The traditional rates based on 55 and 65-year-old people a decade earlier are up around 25-30% a year. This is a horror. And Denise wrote in an email to me anticipating the show. She wrote, "Akathisia should be a household word. Why don't we all know what torture it is and what causes it? It remains so little recognized." And, of course, doctors don't recognize it. Doctors don't recognize it. And I just think that's so important. And, I mean, your child could get it on Risperdal and then end up with it permanently on Risperdal, being unable to sit still, legs constantly moving. Antidepressants cause it too, but not usually permanently. But the damage can be permanent because akathisia is associated with violence. I'm working right now with a young man who opened fire on a group of people with an AK-47 with no real reason at all, but he had horrible akathisia at the time. This is so important, and we're going to be talking and touching on a lot of the most important things. We'll be talking on delirium today, and we'll be talking about something that is so important that, again, Denise foreshadowed for the show, which is that behavior always occurs in a context and has meaning. Do you want to pick up on that? Behavior always occurs in a context and has meaning. You wrote, it's rarely a random meaningless manifestation. And you're referring to your dad. So you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's... it's with my dad, and it was with, you know, with my students that I've taught. I mean, even if somebody has an impairment, if there's some sort of behavior or you know, distress or emotional crisis, it's not directly caused by the diagnosis. There's things in the environment that are triggering people, and even if there is a physical reason for it, like I think in my dad's case, I know he was dehydrated. He tested that way, and that can cause delirium. But clearly, if you investigate the environment and you put yourself in someone's shoes, and you figure out what's contributing and triggering the problem, and it usually has something to do with some kind of identity crisis. You know, people need to feel a positive sense of identity and value, and a lot of times it has to do with that. You know, you want to validate and empower the person, build his identity. What can you ask? What can you change in the environment to make it work better for him? A lot of times it's a mismatch between the individual's needs and the environment. And maybe sometimes you have to protect safety. I mean, I've as being a part of being a special ed teacher, I had physical assault prevention training. So I was prepared to handle a crisis situation with students. But the best way to do that is really to connect with a person, validate him, build him up, not tear him down, which is usually what's already happening.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, that's the idea.
I think the most important way to handle a physical confrontation is to just look like the most harmless, loving person on the face of the earth and give the person space and smile and say, "Hey, buddy, you could easily hurt me. I'm not here to harm you. I couldn't. I wouldn't." And once I got that straight, it became so easy to deal with physically aggressive or threatening people, even in the small confines of my office, when it rarely, rarely came up. I just learned that you become an individual who is totally non-threatening in order to deal with people who are being very threatening because they're just frightened. Denise, I'm looking at your blog. Do you have in front of you? I thought it might be just a really great thing. Let me kind of guide you through reading some of this. Would you do that?
Sure, I can.
All right, well, let me set it up.
Just read.
Let me set it up, okay. And we'll do it together. All right, she's with her dad. It's 2 a.m. She's dozing. It's 12 days since he broke his leg, and he's on meds. And all of a sudden, he's tugging on his bed clothing. He's struggling. He's looking distraught. She sits up, reminds him that she's there. And then what does Dad say? Go ahead.
He says, "Watch out, Denise. Those are live wires on the ground there." And I say, "Dad, are you having a nightmare?"
Now, Dad is, I'll do the narration. Dad's in a full cast. His neck is stiff. He's on pillows. His restlessness is increasing. He's got pain in his spine. He's gripping at a walker, but he can't get up. And then what does he say?
He says, "Stop right there," he shouts to me. And I freeze. "Dad, I'm afraid you'll get hurt and fall. Remember, you're in a hospital bed because you fell on the sidewalk and injured your leg."
And then she says, "I hope I'm awaking him to reality, testing." His eyes are open, but he doesn't seem to be, registering. And then what does he do? He says what?
He says, look at this damage. And he sweeps his hand across an imaginary landscape. The hurricane has ripped the roof off the house. And I say, the hurricane? And he says, yes, don't you see this?
Well, natural disasters have been on his mind all week, she writes. And she goes on to give some of the background and some of what's going on. You'll be very, interested in that, about his involuntary commitment and just the bizarre brutality of it. And then she goes on and she describes that her dad is now threatening about the hurricane damage. He appears to be acting in a dream, and it's not the first time that he's been in a situation like this. He broke his wrist hitting the bedside while dreaming about a karate movie once. So you say, which house, Dad? And then pick up on it.
And then he says, our house. And I say, the Palisades house or your retirement house? He says, Palisades.
Well, there's so much here that we could cover, and let's take it down to, we haven't practiced this, folks. To Dad, I see you are worried and frustrated.
Let me find you here. Yeah, so I say, Dad, I see you're worried and frustrated. I love you, and I want to help. Can you be patient while we try to figure this out?
Just keep reading.
And at first, he seems convinced, and then he frowns. Wait a minute. Why are we even having this conversation? You're just a pipsqueak. You're my little itty-bitty daughter.
True, I was a pipsqueak once. Maybe he'll recognize the other truths from the past. I think you could just go and keep reading now by yourself.
Okay. Dad, remember how you converted the playroom into my bedroom when Chris was born? Remember how you helped me pack up that room and drove off to college? I'm grown up now. Can you bear with me while I try to help? And he looks pensive. This is sort of registered, so I have another idea. Dad, remember when I filled in for your secretary at Teachers College during summer vacation? You used to dictate your memos. Maybe you could dictate a memo now about how to address the hurricane damage. And he says, do you have something to write with? Heartened, I get out a pencil and paper. He says, one, call a roofer. Make sure he's local. Call the lumber yard for a referral. And he pauses, skilled in dictating at the proper speed. And then he resumes, speaking clearly and succinctly. Two, buy tarps from the hardware store with grommets. Three, hire carpenters for temporary repairs. Have them bring hammers and nails to secure the tarps. Four, install a telephone in Villa 380. We'll stay there while we're fixing the Palisades house. Villa 380 was his current address. Five, tell Mom we need anti-clotting stuff, but don't order anything unnecessary, especially medical stuff. Six, reinstall telephones. Seven, run the hot and water, cold water lines to remove sediment. Drain the hot water tank with a 3/4-inch garden hose. Eight, call the plumber to inspect the water lines to ensure we have a clean water supply. Nine, use a black felt-tip pen to mark where we need outlets about 10 inches above the floor. Get Mom's approval. He continues his detailed action plan for items 10 and 11. He requests more towel racks and space for recycling, apparently upgrading the original design. And then he finally concludes, 12, order medical records, find out all the associated charges. And I read the list aloud back to him, and he approves. And then he adds, if you need Mom, she's down at the Tanaka's house. And the Tanakas were close friends of ours in Palisades. Their house was a likely place to find Mom during conflict or crisis. So all week, Dad has been worried about her periodic disappearance. and now he believes she's in a safe place. He looks peaceful. His eyelids close. Good night, Dad. Pleasant dreams. Good night, Denise. And then I say shortly afterwards, 50 minutes after he awoke confused and agitated, the nurse comes in to offer him his Risperdal, and I indicate that he's no longer upset, that he's sleeping, and he really doesn't need the medication.
Let's stop there and talk about the implications of the way you're talking with your father. Now, some people would say you're pandering to his mental illness or his dementia. What do you say about that? Because I love what you're doing talking with your dad. What do you say to that?
Well, I was able to break into his dream at least slightly, even though if I couldn't wake him up, I could relate to something that he could relate to as true. Something I said, I was trying to work this out because it was sort of difficult. He was agitated, and I struggled with, well, what can I say that would maybe calm his emotions underlying his words? And what can I say that we both might register as true? So I was just feeling my way through that. It worked enough to make a connection with him. This is actually the only time that during his hospitalization that he actually didn't wake up. This occurred during the night, and I really think he was acting out a dream. But other times when he'd become agitated, he eventually would come around and just be pretty lucid. And was able to articulate sort of an emotional conflict he was thinking about. So I don't know. I just did the best I could. Maybe you can expand on that, Peter. I mean, I think it's helpful to have concrete examples of how to relate to somebody who's distressed and they're not making a lot of sense, maybe, or they're.
Well, I just totally agree with you 100% about taking a caring approach to your impaired dad. And, sometimes with people who would be considered deeply disturbed, who don't have any brain injury, but they're, hallucinating a great deal, I'll try to engage them in a friendly conversation, a warm conversation about what they're experiencing. And sometimes these events can even take a playful turn. I'll always, with somebody who's not brain injured severely or heavily drugged, I'll always kind of let them know that I'm not in the same reality they are, that they're in an alternative reality from me without a confrontation, but that I'm happy to enter into it with them to try to help understand it, try to see what it's all about, and try to make peace with them. It's almost never useful to do a direct confrontation, but rather a loving guidance, which is what you did with your dad. And I think that was, just a wonderful thing that you did. And I really recommend that people go and read your full blog. And I'm hoping that you're going to just give us a long series about these things and for us to talk about. It is so common for people to get delirious. You wrote me that it occurs in 50% of hospitalized adults over 65. Well, I believe that. And what those folks need is relationship. I still come back to that most fundamental thing of all, loving relationship. If you want something to live by, folks, think of the two words, loving relationship. That's it. That's it.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, it is the secret to life. It is the foundation of all good religion, in my opinion. and the opinion of many, many scholars of the Judeo-Christian tradition. And when in doubt, always seek at best a respectful and caring relationship. And if you can, a loving relationship, that not a romantic or sexual relationship, I'm not talking about that, but the fundamental essence of it is the same. It's just loving another human being, caring about them, being interested in them, and if necessary, if they're deeply wounded, guiding them in a way that lets them know your reality may be different from theirs, but that you want to share their reality to see if you can understand it and see if you can be of any help and guidance to them. And what I'll do is just remind people that these horrible hallucinations they have, they're really from the trauma of childhood, and maybe together we can stand up to those hallucinations, even though I think that they're generated from within, you feel they're coming from outside. To me, they're the same things you had in childhood. And let's remember that every time you and I are talking really close, those hallucinations, they diminish. They may not even be here if we're having a really good, engaged conversation. So remember that, talking to my client again, talking to my audience, talking to you and myself, that it's all about a caring relationship. Psychiatry knows nothing about that. There's no more training in that. That's not even considered a possibility. But it's what all good help is about.
You know, Peter, one thing that strikes me when you're talking about this is that, because this happened to my dad, I have a special interest in, the effects of these drugs and how they come to be used with a population of older adults, people who are in sort of the last chapter of their lives. And I think that this stage of life, there's some unique emotional challenges. And it comes because, you know, our bodies are breaking down like my dad's was. And we can't do some of the same activities and roles, play the same kind of roles that we've played. And these roles have given our life meaning and defined who we are as a person. And then, you know, you're in this stage and you have to kind of find peace with a new reality as you decline. My dad was grieving. He was grieving that he and my mom had acted in plays throughout their whole retirement. And he couldn't learn his lines anymore. And so, you know, he's already grieving about certain things, trying to find a new way to derive a sense of meaning and value. And we wanted to reassure him of that. We wanted to reassure him that even if he can't do these things anymore, it doesn't diminish how much we cherish his company and love him. But then, you know, a person becomes ill and, then they're not, you know, you can kind of feel like your whole world is falling apart. So, you know, and it can just be because of this developmental stage rather than something that happened in childhood or anything. It can happen to anybody. Delirium has been called everyone's psychosis, and with hyperactive delirium, a patient doesn't like to stay in bed or be restrained, and they can be combative. And there are risk factors for that, And my dad had all the risk factors. He had advanced age, some cognitive impairment and hearing and vision loss, and then he was injured, he was on medications, he was immobilized, he was dehydrated, he was constipated, he was in pain, he had a change of environment, he was separated from my mom. This all adds up to a stressful situation, but the way that it was interpreted in his, you know, psychiatric evaluation was that he was paranoid about, you know, his, you know, felt like he was being, he or my mom or their safety was being threatened. And I just don't see it as paranoia. It wasn't fear without a cause. These things cause anybody to be stressed. And we can react in a way that that makes people feel more secure. Now, this is a time to draw loved ones near so that you feel like somebody's watching over you and watching out for you.
Let me remind folks that there are I have resources about the very things we're talking about. One of them is my book, The Heart of Being Helpful, really talks about this. And another is you can get on my website or the my therapy. You can find my therapy DVD. Don't remember the name of it, on empathic therapy, where I relate to people to the best of my ability who are playing the part of being very disturbed and maybe expressing often some of their own experiences. So this is a lot on the website that deals with these issues, including the talk that I have up when I'm speaking to the biblical counselors. There's so much good today in this conversation. And again, it's Denise Herrenbruck, Herrenbruck. But you can get easy contact with your information by going to Bregan.com and actually looking at her, my description, of introduction to her talk, and then her talk, and at the end of it, her blog, and at the end of it, you know, your contact information for getting in touch with her. Denise, I think I'll take a call. I'm going to be selective and take a call that one of the several calls that I think is most appropriate, might be the most interesting for today, because it's going to be about relationship. And remind folks that I'm going to be doing an open line to talk about anything the last session of every month, unless I'm out of town. And I'll be doing one the last month in September, on Wednesday the 26th, live talk. Sometimes I'll also take general questions here, you know, but we're having such a good talk. I'm gonna go to a listener who wants to talk about online support groups, because I think that there's a lot of good in them. I don't have a lot of familiarity with them, but Jean in Chicago, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, very, very good. It's like you're in the next room. Are you hearing me okay?
I hear you both very well.
Okay. You wanted to talk about or ask a question about online support groups?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I want to say that I really think this is a fabulous show, Denise. I'm really touched, and I'm always touched by, I could repeat exactly what Denise said in the beginning about you, Dr. Bregan. I recently found you, and I feel listening to you itself is therapeutic. So I just want to thank you very much for your humanity, and I know your wife, Ginger, must be fantastic because of the way you talk about her, but both of you are just giving me such a feeling of humanity and humaneness, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Jean. This means a lot to both of us, and for Denise, who's never been on the radio before, I don't think. What do you think about that communication, that wonderful communication?
I think Denise is absolutely fabulous. Denise, I'm totally.
Yeah, touched. Denise, I'm asking you to respond.
Thank you, Jean.
I don't think you knew you could respond on the air. I don't think I told you can answer questions too.
Thanks so much, Jean. Yeah, I'm with you. Yes, and my thanks are due to Ginger too. I think she was the one who really connected us.
Yes. Is this your first radio show? I think it is, Denise, isn't it? Have you done some before?
Yeah, this is my first radio show, yes.
Yeah, so you're being told that you're really a good communicator. That's a big deal.
Oh, well.
You don't hear this all the time.
Thank you.
Well, go ahead, Jean. She's speechless. Go ahead.
Well, I definitely mean it with all my heart. And my mother had dementia, so what you're saying, vascular dementia, so what you're saying has a special meaning, because I do feel that people in different situations, but especially the dementia situation, need just what Peter said, loving relationship and also connection. You know, as far as the drugs, it's just a matter of trying to, you know, a drug may just drown out feelings, but what a person really is asking for is connection and some kind of control over their existence and meaning. So I did want to mention the online resources because, you know, just as a little bit of background, I do have a master's in social work and I've done a little bit of work in the mental health field. And I sometimes suffer myself from anxiety. And what I have found are some online chat groups that are all about, you know, they're people with different problems. Anxiety could be one, depression could be another. And it's an interesting kind of situation because you go there and some of the people are regulars and they may be just talking. And then when somebody says, hey, I need some help, it's almost like when you throw some fish food in an aquarium. Everybody gathers around and they're, okay, how can I help? And maybe they'll have a private message. You have an opportunity to have a private message with someone so you can just talk one-on-one with someone. And then I recently came across, I'm not overly familiar with it, but there's a website that somebody put up. It's called r20.com, and it's for recovering drug addicts. And it's a community. I think it's very affordable. I think people pay $140 a year. And they have access to all kinds of resources and communities of people that are in recovery. And it's built a lot around yoga and meditation. But I was thinking, as far as you, Dr. Bregan, I hope you look at that, because I think that's something you could set up with all the people that you know and that you have on the radio show, just like Denise. I think, you know, rather than just going to one doctor who may prescribe drugs, here you have access to a lot of people that share a common problem and may have a lot of different ways to deal with it, and more in the loving relationship type of way. So that's what I wanted to share.
So how do I Google it? R20?
You can just go to the website, r20.com. I think it stands for Recovery 2.0, but the website is called r20.com. And it's very well done. I think, as I say, I have such, you know, confidence that you could put something like that. You already have a fantastic website, but I think you could get some good ideas from that r20.com.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jean. Tell us a little more about yourself. I'm doing a little bit more, you know, like in-depth talking with guests than some other shows do. I listen to talk radio a lot, and the guests go pop, pop, on and off. And I'm going to do a different style. And folks can write to me about whether they like this style or not. But I'm just not going to do I'm trying to do it the way I feel comfortable. And I feel comfortable when I actually get to chat a bit. So tell us a little more about yourself. Do you have a private practice, clinical practice in Chicago?
No, I don't. I've been actually in different fields. I work in advertising and I'm involved in music on a personal level. And I'm actually at a stage in my life. I'm 65, so I'm a little bit.
Are you? My gosh, you sound very young, very clear. You've kept your voice and spirit up.
I hope so. I believe in life and love, and but I'm a little bit at that stage that Denise, it rang a little bit of a bell, because I'm trying to create more meaning in my life. I have a job and so forth. It's actually in financial services, but I don't even have a license. I'm thinking of getting the license in social work so that I could possibly use that. But I'm going through a little bit of that difficulty of, okay, I need to make this meaningful. I had a partner. I had a man who was in my life for quite a while, and he died in 2013, and that kind of threw me for a loop. So I'm just trying to create a good life, a meaningful, loving, positive, creative life. And I'm doing everything I can to do so.
Does God play any role in your life?
God, in the not in a specific defined sense, but yes, absolutely. A higher power, just the miracle of everyday life, just the unfolding of, you know, to me, everything is pretty much a miracle. I don't really take anything for granted. And so I try to live in concert, in harmony with that, as far as, my father was a doctor, so I think part of that is a little bit related to, let's say, to God. Not that my father, I know doctors are gods, but I mean in terms of just the miraculousness of life and the fact that there's meaning here and that love is extremely important and seems like it's in pretty short supply, at least, on the surface, as far as what we hear. I do think there's plenty of love. We just don't hear a lot about it.
Yeah. Denise, let me get you back in a conversation. We've got 2 minutes left. I won't be taking any additional callers, but do remember, September 26th will be open lines. All goes well, there'll be open lines. And on any given day, you might fit into the theme in a way that I think is going to work. But Denise, you got about a minute and a half. Did you have anything you wanted to ask of Jean or comment about? I mean, we're really talking about relationship and love.
I would like to pick up on her comment that people still need connection, even, as they age, as they decline. People need connection, validation, and dignity. And you can connect meaningfully with someone even when they're in decline. And quality of life is possible even as we age. It just requires an adjustment, and there are transitions that that we have to go through. There are periods of time in our life. I'm 63, so I'm not far behind you, Gene. And I'm starting to go through a transition too, and it's an adjustment.
Folks, everybody out there, Jean, and Denise, what a pleasure to be getting to know Denise Herrenbruch. And my wonderful guests. I mean, I'm not even calling you my audience anymore. You're my guests, and I'm your guest, and we're going to be getting together on Bregan Live at hotmail.com or in any other way we can, and I'll be thinking about all of your suggestions. And I just look forward immensely, immensely to, just continuing this wonderful relationship. And next week, talking about love and relationship, Michael Cornwall, one of my favorite psychologists in the whole world, who knows so much about everything, will be my guest. Bye now, folks. Thanks for being there.